Estonian Epistles by David Montrose, with Robert Stevens, Paul Shelley, and Oliver Ford Davis.
Mr. A. Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, 14th October. Dear Mr. Bryant, thank you for your letter of 6th October. I would be pleased to give you some reviewing work for the Metropolitan Review. I did, in fact, see quite a few of your pieces in Quill and was most impressed. I was sorry when the magazine had to cease publication, even though we seem to have picked up most of its former readership. I enclose a couple of books that were lying around the office. If you could do 1,000 words on either or both of them by Monday, I'd be obliged. I hope this might be the start of a continuing association between yourself and the magazine. I'm always keen to give real writers space, as it makes a nice change from all these bloody academics who spend so much time keeping up with the latest trends in structuralism and semiotics and fabulation and metafiction, and they hardly have any time left to read any actual literature. Besides which, none of them seems to have any concept of the term deadline. Best wishes, John Sims, editor.
Metropolitan Review, please.
Thank you.
Sir, my attention has been drawn to Andrew Bryant's review, drolly entitled Stern Judgment of My Yorick Before Tristram, The Early Years and Middle Life of Lawrence Stern, Metropolitan Review, 24th of October. It would, as they say, take a book to refute fully the various shots fired during this outbreak of literary gangsterdom. I shall, therefore, confine my remarks to the points that stood out as particularly distasteful in what was an offensive performance throughout. Mr. Bryant has made great sport of my chapter, Who Was Agnes Stern?, about Stern's mother, the subject of which he apparently considers outrageously recondite. It is probably true that the general reader will lose little sleep over the matter. However, my intention was to refute the argument contained in, among others, Connolly's Lawrence Stern as Yorick, London, 1958, Hartley's Lawrence Stern, a biographical essay, Chapel Hill, 1968, and Curtis's Notes to the Letters of Lawrence Stern, Oxford, 1935, that Agnes was the daughter of Captain Christopher Nuttall. Mr. Bryant is perhaps ignorant of these books' existence and hence unaware of this fallacious argument. While my chapter adds nothing to our understanding of Stern's work, I suggest that historical accuracy is a sufficient end in itself. The 3 pages devoted to the correct pronunciation of Eliza Draper, Eliza or Eliza, were included for similar reasons. I regret that Mr. Bryant found it necessary to direct cheap jibes at the minor errors and misprints that inevitably find their way into an undertaking of Yorick before Tristram's scope. With one exception, I regard this particular point-scoring exercise as unworthy of comment. The exception is Mr. Bryant's remark that Lawrence Stern's second brother was called Joram, not Jerome. Naturally, I appreciate that most scholars favour Joram. However, Seton Lothmark, in his magnificent Lawrence Stern, Vicar of Sutton, New York, 1971, prefers Jerome. And such is my admiration for Professor Lothmark's contribution to Sternian studies that I am prepared to follow his lead. On the subject of inaccuracies, Mr. Bryant would do well to remember the saying about the first stone. His review stated that the journal to Eliza was begun in Stern's 54th year. He means 55th. Touché. In closing, may I say that at the time of writing, my book has been reviewed by 12 publications. Only your own has been less than fulsome in its praise. Surely this proves something. H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro.
Andrew Bryant writes,
Professor Dash's pique is not unexpected. Its direction is. That he is primarily upset by my brief aside about his painstaking and making research into Agnes Stern's identity, when elsewhere I question the very need for his book, attests to a rather distorted sense of priority. I agree with Professor Dash that historic accuracy is desirable, and I admit flippancy in my statement that, in answer to his question, who was Agnes Stern, he should, remembering the reply to Agatha Christie's question, who killed Roger Ackroyd, have asked Edmund Wilson, whose emphatic reply on that occasion was, of course, who cares? Instead, of course, I should have queried the need for him to expend no less than 37 pages on this topic, especially when his sole argument is a somewhat idiosyncratic revaluation, what if, perhaps, could it be that of the known facts? If Professor Dash truly believes he has answered his own question, well, I'm happy for him. For me, however, all he has done is emphasize that Agnes may well have been someone other than Nuttall's daughter, a distinct possibility previously acknowledged by most scholars. As for Professor Dash's sneer that I am perhaps ignorant of the books by Connolly and Hartley and of Curtis's edition of Stern's letters, in fact, all three grace my bookshelves, along with Lofmark's book, Professor Dash's very own The Cervantic Mode of Tristram Shandy, and books on Stern by Fitzgerald, Cross, Flusher, Stapfer, Trail, Howes, and Traugott. It is probable, as indeed I stated in my review, that Professor Dash knows more than I about Stern, or at least I hope he does. I am not, however, quite as unread as he likes to imagine. Professor Dash alleges that I poked fun at minor errors and misprints. In fact, I was at pains not to do this. Thus, I did not mention the sentence on page 263, beginning the Treaty of Aix-la-Chapelle in 7148, as it seemed distinctly possible that the date was a misprint for 1748, and not some clairvoyant glimpse into the future of Europe. Nor did I refer to the phrase on page 128, Dr. William Ward, an elderly pork lawyer, as with rare perception I reasoned that Professor Dash wished to impart the information that Dr. Ward was a resident in York, and not that he invariably acted on behalf of an unspecified quantity of pig flesh. I viewed it as worthy of mention, however, when Professor Dash, so keen on genealogy, overlooked the existence of Simon Stern, one of Lawrence's uncles. When he consigned Mary Stern to her grave in 1708, despite the evidence that she was still alive in 1715, shades of Poe, and when he referred to Stern publishing volumes 5 to 7 of his sermons in 1769, by which time the man had been rotting in his coffin for almost a year. The Joram Jerome question merits particular attention. If Professor Dash had read all of Professor Lofmark's book instead of just page 37, the one that mentions Jerome Stern, he might have encountered the erratum slip that reads, page 37, line 16, Jerome Stern should read Joram Stern. I cannot agree with Professor Dash's contention that Stern started the Journal to Eliza in his 55th year. Stern was born on November the 24th, 1713. The first entry in the journal is dated April 13th, 1767. I am confident that even a professor of English will be able to calculate that Stern was, therefore, 53, or, as I chose to put it, in his 54th year at the start of the journal. Finally, I agree with Professor Dash's remark that 11 out of 12 fulsome reviews of his book prove something. However, what it proves for me is, I suspect, rather different from what it proves for him.
Pressure of work prevents a full reply to Andrew Bryant's comments on my letter. Metropolitan Review, 31st of October, concerning his review of Yorick Before Tristram, The Early Years and Middle Life of Laurence Sterne. I anticipate in a few weeks I shall be able to spare time for a detailed rebuttal of his points, and I trust the necessary space will be available in your column. In the meantime, may I advise Mr. Bryant to consult page 19 of Seton Lothmark's magnificent Laurence Sterne, Vicar of Sutton, where he will see that Sterne was born in February 1713, therefore, on April 13th, 1767, the date of the first entry in the journal to Eliza, he was 54, or, as Mr. Bryant should have put it, in his 55th year. H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro.
Andrew Bryant writes,
"While I share Professor Dash's reverence for the work of Seton Lothmark, I cannot accept everything he has ever published as holy writ. Accordingly, had Professor Lothmark actually written, as Professor Dash asserts, that Sterne was born in February 1713, I should be compelled to disbelieve and accept instead the evidence provided by Sterne's own memoirs. I was born November 24th, 1713, a few days after my mother returned from Dunkirk. I'm pleased to say, however, that Professor Lothmark is not at fault. On page 19 of his book, he states that Laurence Sterne was begotten in February 1713. Professor Dash, whose grasp of our language is seemingly as suspect as one would expect from a professor of English, has simply interpreted begotten as meaning born, and not, as the dictionary and Professor Lothmark would have it, conceived. This, I think, settles our divergence of opinion. I look forward to seeing Professor Dash's detailed reply, which will no doubt give me further cause for comment and amusement."
Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, 3rd December. "Dear Andrew, I do hope that Professor Dash is not going to let your promising controversy drop. The readers love that kind of thing. Already I've received a number of appreciative letters, mostly supporting you, I'm glad to say. With a bit of luck, it could be Leavis against Snow all over again. Ah, that would work wonders for our circulation figures. Perhaps you could do something to stir Dash into activity. And it's always a pleasure to see these bloody academics on the run. Best wishes, John Sims. P.S. Could you let me have 2,000 words on the enclosed by next Monday?"
"Sir, some 5 weeks ago, Metropolitan Review, 7th November, Professor H.A. Dash undertook to reply in full to my comments on his letter, Metropolitan Review, 31st October, concerning my review of his book, Yorick Before Tristram. To the best of my knowledge, this reply has not been forthcoming. Does Professor Dash wisely propose to let our stimulating dispute lapse? Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex."
"Sir, let me assure Andrew Bryant, Metropolitan Review, 12th of December, that when time permits, I shall refute to everyone's satisfaction, except possibly his own, the plethora of vexatious inexactitudes he has hurled at my Yorick Before Tristram, The Early Years and Middle Life of Laurence Sterne. At present, however, I am engaged in the preparation of a major paper. Did Simon Sterne really exist? To be delivered at the Triennial Conference for Sternian Studies at the University of New Mexico. Naturally, this work of serious scholarship bulks larger in my mind than the rather tiresome cut and thrust of a petty squabble. Consequently, the latter will have to wait a while. H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro." Andrew Bryant, Esquire, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, England, 3rd of January. "Dear Mr. Bryant, my paper is written. This is notice, therefore, that the demolition is at hand of whatever reputation you may possess. But is it really worth it? I confess that at the outset of your misguided vendetta, I was moved to anger and wished nothing less than your utter destruction. However, time, the healer, has worked its magic, and while I cannot forgive your outrageous smear campaign, I do find that my attitude towards you has softened from violent loathing to mild dislike. I no longer desire your ruin, nor, as I once did, to tear out your liver with my bare hands. I must also consider the possibility that when I annihilate your card house of reasoning, you will, in an attempt to cloud the issue further and play down the totality of your defeat, fling still wilder accusations at me. Of course, no great effort would be required on my part to crush these claims in turn. However, as you know, the Grove of Academe is populated with literary hitmen, in comparison with whom Vlad the Impaler would appear positively beneficent. Among these men, I have enemies who would regard your absurd charges as proven, no matter how complete my refutation. These individuals are, of course, intellectual pygmies, but their opinions matter. Some short-lived damage to my reputation might well result. And to avoid this minor annoyance, therefore, I am prepared to let you off the hook. Thus, you will be spared the trouble of seeking alternative employment. What magazine would retain a broken reviewer? And I shall continue my smooth ascent via Stern's coattails. Satisfactory all around. I think you will agree. To wrap things up, I suggest you drop a brief note to the Metropolitan Review saying we resolved our disagreements privately, blown up out of all proportion. Errors on both sides, amicable agreement, etc., etc. That should enable the matter to be swiftly forgotten. Yours sincerely, H.A. Dash, care of University of New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, USA.
Andrew Bryant for Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, 8th January. Dear Andy, thanks for passing on Dash's letter. As you say, the thing is obviously a gigantic bluff, and I think it should be called. I realize that you're prepared to let the matter rest because you know you're in the right, but I'm sure our readership would prefer to see it proceed to a showdown. With you, of course, as victor. I hope you will come around to my way of thinking. Best wishes, John.
Sir, a month has passed without word from Professor Dash, Metropolitan Review, 19th December. Do I cut myself a laurel wreath? Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex.
Perhaps Professor Dash could state whether he considers the matter closed. Ed.
The editor. Metropolitan Review, Great John Street, London, WC1, England. January 20th. Dear sir. No. Yours faithfully, H.A. Dash, care of Maron Hall, University of New Mexico, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87106, USA. Hello? Western Union? Fine. I want to send a cablegram to England. Fine. It's to A. Bryant. Bryant. 4 Beach Chase. No, not beach as in seashore covered with sand. Beach as in forest tree with smooth bark and glossy leaves. Fine. Little Abridge. A-B-R-I-D-G-E. Essex. That's sex, which I'm sure you've heard of, with E-S in front of it. England? That's all right? Fine. Now, the message is, Bryant Dash, so that's the way you're going to play it, you bastard. Stop. All right, Dash. I'll be back in England next week. Stop. So sell all the reviews you can, semicolon, while you've still got time and a reputation. Stop. Sorry? I can't say what? Can't say bastard? Oh, well. Well, just leave a blank instead. He'll know what I mean. All right, then put expletive deleted, if that's company policy. I couldn't give an expletive deleted. And sign it dash, please. No, that's not punctuation. That's my name. Right? Fine. Fine. Thank you. Jesus Christ. Sir, I am writing to let you know that my refutation of Andrew Bryant, Metropolitan Review, 19th of December, will unfortunately be further delayed. On my return to this country after the triumphant delivery of my paper, Did Simon Stern Really Exist?, at the Triennial Conference for Sternian Studies, I prepared a lengthy obliteration of Mr. Bryant's arguments. However, on the eve of posting, the manuscript was playfully ripped to shreds by my pet dog, ironically called Diamond, a dog of this name, as Mr. Bryant will probably not know, similarly destroyed Newton's definitive work on gravitational theory. As I kept no carbon, it will be necessary for me to construct the whole thing from a mass of semi-legible notes, which could take some time. Please counsel Mr. Bryant to be patient. His end is nigh. H.A. Dash, Talking College, University of Cornwall, Truro.
Sir, despite Professor Dash's assurance, Metropolitan Review, 6th of February, that my personal day of judgment was at hand, I noticed that the last trump in the form of his refutation has yet to be blown. Has the cat got his tongue, or the dog his pen? Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex.
Professor H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro, 11th March. Dear Professor Dash, thank you for sending me the 67 letters you have received from readers of this magazine in support of your book, Yorick Before Tristram. I note that while the letters appear to originate from far-flung addresses, I was especially gratified to see both Land's End and John O'Groats represented, and are composed in a variety of styles. They do possess a distinctive similarity, viz. The typewriters on which they were written each have a missing serif on the uppercase T and the F out of alignment. I also note that your own machine appears to share these defects. In view of this unlikely coincidence, I am afraid that I must decline your kind offer to let me publish a selection of letters on our correspondence page. Yours sincerely, John Sims, Editor.
Professor H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro, March 16th. Dear Professor Dash, thank you for your letter threatening to administer a damn good thrashing upon my person should I fail to cease traducing your good name. If you would care to call at the East London Wanderers RUFC training ground in Upton Park any Monday or Thursday evening, I should be pleased to place a few minutes of my time at your disposal. We have, of course, never met, but recognition will present no problem. I'll be the one in the number 4 jersey that's 6'5" and weighs 16.5 stone. I look forward to our meeting. Yours sincerely, Andrew Bryant.
I look forward to hearing your views on the matter. Yours sincerely, blah, blah. Right, this one's to Professor H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro. Dear Professor Dash, thank you for your letter of 20th of March, full stop. New para. I am afraid that I am unable to comply. Yes, that'll do. Comply with your request that, comma, in future, comma, Andrew Bryant be be deprived of the right of reply to your letters on the subject of Yorick, blah, blah. Taking the title of his book there. It's on the file somewhere. And that no further letters from him be published in Metropolitan Review, should they make reference to you, full stop. New para. So far as I am aware, comma, there is no proof that Andrew Bryant has, comma, at any time, comma, indulged in unspeakable acts with goats. No, make that unnatural practices. Unnatural practices with goats. Or, comma, indeed, any other animal, full stop. And even if this were the case, comma, I do not feel that such behavior would necessarily invalidate any comments he might wish to make concerning your book, full stop. New para. Personally, comma, I would be happy. Make that perfectly happy. Perfectly happy to put an end to the whole affair, full stop. However, comma, Mr. Bryant does not agree, and I feel it is my duty as editor to fall in with his wishes. Yeah, yours truly, blah, blah. Right. Now, the next one's to the literary editor, The Listener. Dear Richard.
Andrew Bryant, Esquire, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, March 25th. Dear Mr. Bryant, I had to write. If you don't let our dispute drop, I'm finished. Some bastard has taken to pinning photocopies of your letters on the college notice board. I think it's Fred Kay, author of Baronic Archetypes in Wuthering Heights. You may have heard of him. He's hated me ever since I discredited his theory that Emily Bronte was Branwell in drag. I'm a hissing and a byword throughout the campus. Science dons who used to think that Stern was part of a ship point me out the street with ill-concealed derision. And yesterday, when I remarked at a tutorial that Charles Churchill, despite his scurrilous proclivities, had once been a country curate, a student actually had the nerve to ask if I'd verified this fact with you. The news has already reached America. Steamboat Springs College in Colorado has cancelled my visiting professorship next year. And now I was looking forward to those willowy, blue-eyed blondes. Can't you be satisfied with being right? Must you ruin my career as well? I'm sure you'd be merciful if you knew the strain that book imposed upon me. Imagine, I researched it for 7 years, giving up my holidays to choke on book dust in York and Cambridge. Can you have any conception of what it's like to spend 3 solid months in an ice-cold chapel library, inching through box after box of 18th-century ecclesiastical court records? It was like a Borgesian version of hell. Then there was the actual writing. Another 4 years. And it seemed that whenever I had a chapter finished, some clever sod would publish something to contradict it. I had to rewrite one chapter 17 times. But I soldiered on and eventually reached the end of the book and my tether. 11 years. With full remission, a murderer gets off with a lighter sentence than that. And finally, with my very sanity in the balance, I had to face revising the whole thing. And at this crucial time, my wife chose to run away with one of my most ignorant graduate students. The only Chekhov he'd ever heard of was the navigator in Star Trek, for Christ's sake. And then I discovered that not only was my 15-year-old daughter a heroin addict, but that since the age of 12... she'd been regularly committing incest with my own father. Can you wonder that I overlooked a few errors? I never wanted to be a Sternian anyway. My big interest was always Swift. But Aaron Price and Jafar has beat me to him. An academic has to have some speciality. Who could I turn to? Pottle finished off Boswell. Johnson's a worked out mind. I thought of reviving Richardson, but that would have meant reading Clarissa Harlowe. It's a million words long. The biggest novel in the English language. So I turned to Sterne. I wish now I'd never heard of a big-nosed, white-wigged bugger. You must give me a chance. This torture is taking its toll. My paper for the triennial conference contained a split infinitive and a double negative. A few days ago, while proofreading an essay I'd written on the relationship between Sterne and Eliza Draper, I was shocked to find that I'd indulged in sexual speculations of a singularly unpleasant nature, of which I had no recollection whatever. Now, if that had been published, I should, of course, be prepared to reimburse you for your cooperation, or if financial adjustment is too vulgar, perhaps I can put you in touch with a very attractive young lady, a student of mine, who would, I know, be pleased to engage in late-night discussions of literary significance. I await your reply. Write as soon as you can. Not to the university, though. Fred Kay is quite capable of intercepting my mail. My home address is 39 Kingswood Avenue, Truro. Yours sincerely, Harry Dash. Bryant, Dash, did my letter of the 25th of March arrive safely? Query? If it did, please reply. Stop. My nerves are shot. Stop. I'm a desperate man. Stop. Please reply. Stop. Please reply. Stop. Regards, Dash. Stop. Oh, P.S. My daughter has advised me that she is suffering from a social disease. Stop.
Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, 31st March. Dear Andy, thanks for your letter. All I can say is that you'd be a fool if you fell for Dash's outrageous sob story. He's simply trying to gull you into calling it quits so as he can claim victory. I realize you're sick and tired of the business, but I should tell you that I've been in private correspondence with Dash on this matter, and while it would not, of course, be proper to divulge exactly what has passed between us, I must, for your own good, tell you that Dash has hinted that he expects you to admit defeat at any time. You see what kind of devious double game he's playing. Also, as editor, I have to bear in mind financial considerations. Since your dispute was mentioned in the national press, circulation is up from 38,391 to 43,218. Well, can't all be coincidence. You can see, then, that it is in both our interests for you to keep after him. Best wishes, John.
Sir, still no word from Professor Dash. Andrew Bryant, 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex.
Correct, Ed. Hello, Andy. It's John here, John Sims. I was just wondering if you'd heard anything from that Dash chap. Well, the last I heard from him was that he'd finished his refutation, but that the manuscript had been lost when part of his house was destroyed by a falling meteorite a week or so ago. He told me then he was getting another copy together and it'd be ready before long. Let me know if you've got any info. All the best. Oh, by the way, I trust you've got over your scare. You're bloody lucky it went wrong. These things can take your hand off. I must say, though, I think you're being a bit paranoid if you really think Dash was responsible. The police theory that it was the IRA seems more likely to me. Admittedly, I can't imagine what they've got against you. Oh, unless it was that review of Brendan Feeney's new collection of poems. All the best.
This is a recording. Andrew Bryant is not at home at the moment. If you'd like to leave a message, please speak clearly after the tone.
Bryant, if you want to see your wife again, do not send any more letters to the Metropolitan Review. Do not call the police.
Sir, I am pleased to report that following private correspondence between us, Andrew Bryant has retracted in toto his adverse criticisms of my book, Yorick Before Tristram, The Early Years and Middle Life of Lawrence Sterne, which he now admits to be without foundation. I understand that Mr. Bryant intends to devote his future literary energies to the compilation of crossword puzzles. In view of Mr. Bryant's timely surrender, I do not propose to humiliate him further by publishing my rebuttal of his comments. He has suffered enough. The correspondence can now be considered closed. H.A. Dash, Tolkien College, University of Cornwall, Truro.
Andrew Bryant writes,
"No, it can't. Despair at an untenable position has, I'm afraid, driven Professor Dash to desperate remedies. In order to dissuade me from laying bare the full extent of his sciolism, Professor Dash arranged, with what I take to be characteristic ineptitude, for the removal to a destination unknown of Mrs. Celia Bryant, of 4 Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex. Regular readers will recognize this as my home address, under the impression that the lady in question was my wife. In fact, Celia and I have been divorced for 15 months. Although I was awarded the house in the settlement, my ex-wife chose to demonstrate that possession is indeed 9/10 of the law and remained in residence, despite a court order requiring her to quit the premises and restraining her from coming within a mile radius thereof. I am truly grateful to Professor Dash for his inventive resolution of this impasse. Professor Dash will be interested to learn that I have removed my current girlfriend to a place of safety. I look forward to his long-awaited rebuttal."
"Sir, may I disclaim the shoddy forgery that appeared over my signature in the Metropolitan Review for the 17th of April? To suggest, as your counterfeit correspondent did, that Mr. Bryant would acknowledge his errors is to credit him with an intelligence far beyond his scope. This letter was, I believe, written by an academic rival, the identity of whom, only a lack of conclusive evidence, and the ridiculous severity of the libel laws, prevent me from revealing. On the subject of libel, I am consulting my solicitors, Messrs. Carboy, Bowles and Kenge of Gutter Lane, EC2, concerning Mr. Bryant's allegation that I was in some way responsible for his ex-wife's disappearance and, by implication, her unfortunate demise. As your readers may have read elsewhere, I did briefly assist the police in their inquiries following the discovery of the late Mrs. Bryant's torso in the Thames at North Woolwich. I was, however, subsequently released for want of any incriminating evidence. Unfortunately, my interrogation at Bow Road Police Station has caused me such mental anguish that I have been obliged, on medical advice,
to postpone further work on my demolition of Mr. Bryant until I have fully recovered from the ordeal. Nevertheless, Mr. Bryant should be warned that I am still fully committed to the exposure of his arguments as the deranged scribblings that they are. H.A. Dash, care of the post office, Alsager, near Stoke-on-Trent. Andrew Bryant, Esquire, care of Kate Adams Ward, Brentwood Memorial Hospital, Brentwood, Essex. 1st of May. Dear Mr. Bryant, although we've had our differences, I felt I had to write to express my regret at the shocking news that you have received gunshot wounds at the hand of an unknown assailant. As you are no longer in a coma, I assume that your recovery is progressing satisfactorily. I hope it will not prompt a relapse if I tell you that, barring the intervention of further meteorites, my refutation will soon be ready. All the best. Harry Dash, care of the site office, Canvas City Camping Centre, Cleethorpes. P.S. I have no idea what your plans for recuperation might be, but may I recommend the outdoor life? I have been doing a lot of walking recently and at night sleeping beneath the stars. I have never felt better. The scent of trees is marvellous. And hearing birdsong at sunrise. Oh, dear. I'm beginning to sound like Edward Thomas.
Andrew Bryant for Beach Chase, Little Abridge, Essex, 23rd May. Dear Andy, it was a great pleasure to receive your letter. I'm very glad that you're sufficiently recovered to buckle down to some work. I enclose a few novels you might like to review. 1,500 words by Monday, if you can manage it. I hope that they will take your mind off this preoccupation with Dash. I'm sure that once you settle down to a normal routine again, you'll look at the matter in a less jaundiced light and see that your suspicions are entirely groundless. I do not think one should read too much into the fact that Dash has not been seen by his family or at the university for some weeks. You know how unpredictable these bloody academics are. Probably he just took it in his head to swan off somewhere for a while and will return in his own good time. Anyway, I am confident that his absence will be adequately explained when the police manage to get in touch with him. I understand they drew a blank in Cleethorpes. Best wishes, John.
Sir, I am now in a position to scotch once and for all Andrew Bryant's misguided victimization of my book, Yorick Before Tristram, The Early Years and Middle Life of Lawrence Sterne, Elegiac Press, £16.50 from all leading bookshops. Last Sunday, June the 14th, while attempting to establish contact via a Ouija board with the late Edmund Wilson, I happened, purely by chance, to make the acquaintance of the spirit of Lawrence Sterne. During a lengthy conversation, the glass fairly whizzed by the tabletop. Sterne validated the complete accuracy of my book and was kind enough to compliment me on its punctuation, especially my use of semicolons. So much for Mr. Bryant's footling slights. The more literate of your readers will be interested to learn that, in the course of our discussion, Sterne provided me with much information previously unknown to scholars concerning his life and works. This included the amazing information that Sterne was not only the author of Shakespeare's plays and the life of Johnson — he ghosted it for Boswell, who was laid up at the time with a severe case of Scrivener's palsy — but also was personally responsible for the disappearance of the crew of the Mare Celeste. I am currently preparing a revised version of Yorick Before Tristram, incorporating these exciting new facts. H.A. Dash,
care of...
Mrs. Wadman. Shop a Pentry, Trevorne, Dabith.
Andrew Bryant writes...
No comment.
This correspondence is now closed.
In Sternian Epistles by David Montrose, Robert Stevens played Professor Dash, Paul Shelley, Bryant, and Oliver Ford Davis, Sims. The play was directed by Matthew Walters.